The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is the Death Lineup. Brian and I are here. We actually, I even have to change my background here. We have a interview that we did earlier today that we will play at the back end of this podcast. It's about a half an hour with Michelle Smith, who has been writing about the WNBA since day one. She also has Bay Area ties. And she, we asked her everything about the WNBA, about the Valkyries, about college, women's college basketball. She's got a book coming out. So we'll save that for the back half. But, Bri, we do have to talk about the Warriors beating the Thunder of all teams on Wednesday night. And it was one of those games where, as I'm watching it, and I know our buddy Ben Cruz probably felt the same way, I was like, okay, I'm glad they're competing, but they're going to pull the rug out from under the fans at some point, and the Thunder are just going to take over, and they're going to win the game late, because that's been the season. That's been every game that they've played. You know, they lead the league in clutch games or whatever, and it always feels like the rug gets pulled from under us right at the end. But they didn't. Steph closed. Like, he hit some big shots late. The Thunder scrambled and did not. I don't think they played very well down the stretch. But how surprising was it to see the Warriors win that game?
Yes, yeah, specifically where they are right now, where you saw Washington come up on the schedule not too long ago. And I'm like, well, like, we have looked very bad. I can't just say automatic win there. They ended up winning that game. But it just feels like we're at that point of this season right now where I just can't guarantee any game for this team. And so to see them beat OKC is, you know, brings up some questions that I'm sure we'll talk about regarding trading, regarding, you know, really just, again, you have Stephen Curry, like, do what you can and to try and win, because he can have games like this where, you know, only 21 points, but down the stretch, like, he can win you one, he can win you many. So, but then at the same time, it raises some questions of, like, are we just a really good matchup against OKC? Because last year, you know, we had the in-season tournament game that we end up winning per the review. And then all the other games were like, you know, had to go to OT because the stupid Chet foul. Then the Chet three-point shot OT, whatever that one was, against Wiggins. Like, I feel like we're just like a relatively good matchup against this team as well. So I'm like, do I put that much stock into this W? Because what if we are just for some? And that also justifies my take a little bit that I wouldn't have been too scared if the Warriors were the 8 seed and the Thunder were the first seed. Like, I would have felt a little bit like, hey, we might have a chance. And I feel like this season just keeps, you know, justifying that. Like, I think we are a good matchup against this team.
Now, every time they win a game like this, the fans get a little excited because they're like, oh, maybe this is the beginning of something. I don't sense that this is necessarily the beginning of something because they're still missing Draymond. And it sounds like Kuminga is going to be back post All-Star break. But it's kind of normal to get excited when you beat a team like this. You kind of wonder, you're like, oh, like, what did they figure out? What was different? Who played tremendously well? You know, if I was to point a finger at something, I would say, well, Andrew Wiggins just got really aggressive, and he knew that sort of his responsibility as they were triple teaming Steph to kind of utilize, you know, his advantages there. But at the same time, that's just Wiggs. He'll have a great game, and then the next game, you know, he'll almost just disappear on the court. So I don't know if that it's like, it's not like this thing where Andrew is just like, Oh, now I know. He always knows. He's a good player. He's not the kind of player that's going to take over every game, though. Does it change your mindset about who and what they are? Because we've been saying this ever since they, you know, they got into the post 12-3 start. They just feel like a 500 team, and a game or two above and a game or two below 500, whatever. But they just feel that way.
No, it doesn't change my mindset about who this team is. And if anything, it just is, again, just another reinforcement of, like, you have Stephen Curry. I think you need to maximize him, because I just feel like the mindset is like, well, we'll just, you know, maybe we'll have a better chance going big game hunting in this offseason. And it's like, well, I thought that was last year. I thought that was the plan. I thought that's what we were supposed to do this offseason. It didn't happen. So I think for me, it's just like, yeah, you don't have the best options, but I think at the very least you should, you know, and if you don't want to take the big swing, I think you should take Vucevic. I think that a big, you know, part to this season that needs to figure itself out is, I think Jonathan Kuminga needs to be a starter when he's back. I feel like he started figuring something out, and I feel like, you know, these past couple years he's made big impacts while people were down. I think he needs to be in the starting lineup, but then there's that question of him and Draymond play the same position. Mm-hmm. So you got to pick one, but at the same time, if you have a shooting five, maybe you don't need to pick one. Maybe you could just roll both of them out with Wiggins at the two and the shooting five, and you're good. So I would love to see that experiment. If you're not going to go all in, let's get a guy like Vucevic, or let's just really make this Quentin Post thing work.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to say, like, yeah, the season relies on Quentin Post.
Quentin Post
played 8 minutes last night, posted a zero across the board. But yeah, no, I think that, you know, at the very least, I really hope they do something.
Well, they definitely tried the look, because they've been playing him, you know, a decent amount of minutes, and then they threw him in the starting lineup, I'm sure, to just make the Thunder think about him. And they didn't really, they figured out very soon that this was going to be a Looney game, because Looney's going to work the hardest underneath the basket to get rebounds. And also, he's the one that they trust. It's funny that they trust Looney more than Jackson Davis and anybody else down low to actually catch a basketball and put it in, because that's what happens, right? Because Steph is getting quadruple teamed or triple teamed, and then usually when the ball kind of moves its way around, Looney is available to actually just make layups sometimes, and so they trusted him, and he had a really good game. It was probably the best Looney game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the Vooch trade, now there are three players who the Warriors are tied to, at least through the media, through the rumors: Jimmy Butler, Zach LaVine, and then the third player who is probably the best fit, at least to me, because of the fact that he has the easiest contract to deal with, and you won't have to give up anybody off the current roster who you will need. Do you sense that any of that is smoke to the, is there smoke to the fire, or are the Warriors just always going to be involved in these deals because the players, you know, their agents want the Warriors to be, their names to be involved, and so then they can maneuver off and do other deals with teams that may have, you know, better assets to give up?
Were the three you were saying, you said Butler, LaVine, and what, Vucevic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, I think it's a boring answer. I think it's a little bit of both. I think since we're so, you know, you have the podcast on the Giants, and of course I follow them as well. Just the feeling of second place all the time. Like,
yep,
you kind of get that a little bit here. But, you know, the Bill Simmons podcast, that trade value thing he did, he was like, I think there's only one team that has a chance at Jimmy Butler, and it's the Golden State Warriors. And you hear stuff like that, and it's like, well, maybe then. But at the same time, I do think this is a very aggressive team that, you know, hopes to, like, I hope that, you know, when Steph is unfortunately not on the team anymore in multiple years, like, we are like the Lakers and the Knicks, where it's like, oh, the Warriors, they could, or in the Heat as well, you know, those big market teams that just have a chance at every single free agent, like that of course would be sick. But no, I do think it's a little bit of both, of players, you know, using us for their advantage and vice versa. So yeah,
the Butler and LaVine deal, all of those deals kind of start and stop with Andrew Wiggins and the idea that he has to be involved just to match salaries. Now, you even said that you went on the trade value thing and you couldn't even get Butler to the Warriors because of all the craziness to the money. I'm at the point where Jimmy Butler is he's a very interesting person, but I'm not sure he's a better fit than Andrew Wiggins. And that's kind of where I start and stop with it. So if I don't even think he's a better fit than Wiggins is, then you add all of the other scenarios with him just being frustrated and kind of being on the outs with every team he's played for. That is a bit of a headache. There's a risk to that. And then you lose Andrew Wiggins, who is just a great supplemental piece. Like, if you actually get a number two and Andrew Wiggins is your number three, that maximizes his value, right? So that's where I start and stop with Jimmy Butler is like, I would rather have Wiggins. And if that, and I guess the Warriors have to make that call, and maybe they've already made that call and they go, look, if we can make it work, Jimmy Butler is better than for us than Wiggins. But I don't know, as a fan, I watch Wiggins and I go, okay, he needs to be on this team for them to be successful because, you know, he's got to guard the best player on the other team. And I don't know if Jimmy at 35 years old or however old he is can actually do that still.
Yeah, I think it's tough with the Warriors money situation where Wiggins is the one that has to go, yet he feels like the most essential when it comes to like being able to guard the lead ball handler. Like, no, if Wiggins goes, then, well, GP is your best guard defender, but if Wiggins goes, then GP is really one of your only guard defenders that you really trust. And of course, you can't play him too many minutes because of what, you know, he has an injury problem as well, but also just it's hard to fit him in sometimes. So it's tough because, yeah, Wiggins really is that type. Like, I think we were still 10th in defense not that long ago. And, you know, Draymond's been out, so a lot of it feels like it has been Wiggs to help out there. And so, yeah, I think he's a tough one to just like casually be like, yeah, it has to be Wiggins. Like, he's not just no salary filler. Like, he is like an impactful player. But I think at the same time, when we talk about Jimmy Butler, and I think we do this with all players, like for an example, like with Brandon Pajemski to end last year, it's like, ooh, you know, maybe we, you know, I don't think we can include him in a Lowry Markkanen trade. But if we talk about him right now, because and that was, of course, when the season ended, we hadn't seen anything past that. But now it's like, man, I'd include three Brandon Pajemskis for Lowry Markkanen. And so I think we do a lot of like what we remember most recently kind of is the value of that player. But I think with Jimmy, a little bit of it is he feels wronged by a Miami Heat organization and therefore has not really given the best effort. And I understand that means like, well, do you want that type of player on the team who, you know, that can then happen to your organization? But at the same time, this is a guy who took an eighth seeded Miami Heat. We're not 2 years even removed from this, where he took an eighth seeded Heat to the finals. And in the first round against the Milwaukee Bucks, the Miami Heat's best player today, like, broke his wrist in like the second game. So he did not even have Tyler Hero in that entire run. It was just like him. It's like, we're not talking about a number two. We're talking about our number one. This guy is a top 10 player in the league. If he is like, when it gets to like postseason basketball, like he just becomes like this generational player. And I would, you know, if he does get dealt to a team and that happens in the postseason, like we're going to be sitting here like, damn, like, why didn't we do that? Like, it's just Wiggins, you know, it's just Wiggs. We could have just done it. And so that's why I'm like, again, we need someone. Games like this remind everyone that if Stephen Curry's on your roster, you have a chance. So why not? But at the same time, I understand that Jimmy's expectation when he gets dealt to a team is that they offer him the max extension. Obviously not a favorable contract, but when the guy's already 35 or whatever he is, not going to be a good contract. And this probably isn't one of those where just give it to him and he can get out of it. Trade him down the line. And I don't know. I think he's, of course, as he continues to age, the value decreases. And then I'm sure the money gets more. It's going to be like one of those ascending contracts where it's like 53 here, 55 the next year. So it is going to be hard to probably get out of that. I almost wonder, though, if it's like to the point where he just feels that much disrespected by the Miami Heat, kind of like a Clay situation where we thought that Clay wanted a specific number. And if he didn't get that number, he was going to feel disrespected, and then he signed with the Mavericks for less than what we thought. Like, I wonder if there's maybe a similar situation, although not apples to apples, of like Jimmy just feels that much disrespected by Miami right now. He'll just go to the Warriors and just show them like, hey, yeah, I'm not even going to ask this contract from them. I'm just like, screw the Miami Heat right now. Like, whatever. Like, I'm going to be petty Jimmy. He's literally like, that's what he's known for, to be petty.
So the other player, and this person would fit tremendously well offensively for the Warriors, which is Zach LaVine. Like, he's actually the kind of player that they need to pair with Steph. There's the health factor, the injury risk. His contract isn't as bad as Jimmy's on the average. I think there's actually a few more years left of it. I should have checked that before we recorded. But the flip side is the amount of defense that you would lose with Zach LaVine. I could imagine, and this may be a Kerr thing, right? Like, it seems like the way that Kerr would protect his starting lineup if you had Steph and Zach together, it's obviously Draymond, then it's whomever his best center is defensively, and then it's whomever his best wing defender. If GP was still on the team, GP would almost always play with those two guys together. And then if it's not GP, then it's, you know, whomever he thinks is like the best defensive forward or wing out there. And I just don't see the Warriors making that swing, because I don't ever just see them trading defense for offense. It's almost the opposite of what Kerr does.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I do think Zach LaVine,
it would be fun, more.
Yeah, he's like your typical like number two. The only thing with Zach, though, is I feel like he's played so well this year where it isn't like we don't have to give assets to get him. Like, it's just such a bad contract that they're just willing to just, you know, match the money just to get off of it. I actually do feel like there might have to be an asset involved, just, well, how well he's been playing this year. Well, whereas I don't think that's the case for Jimmy. I think you could just get him if you match the money just because of how bad the situation is over there. But no, I agree with you. I think, and that's what sucks about JK. I feel like not kind of being the point of attack defender that he showed to be in his rookie season. And even year two is like, I don't really trust him on some of these lead ball handlers. That kind of puts a damper on the just lineup construction. Cause yeah, it does feel like GP becomes that much more important. And even Moses, like, man, I wish he was more of a reliable point of attack defender. And yet he's like, it's like selective. It's like, he's good against the slower guards, but not as much against the really quick ones. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be good, of course. It would only make them better. I think it would only make them better. But at the same time, yeah, it just doesn't feel like very Warriors-y to, you know, they're the 10th defense and the 20-something offense. Like, they would almost switch positions.
Yeah. And would that keep Kerr up at night and give him anxiety, just the fact that they would give up so much? But then you go, you know, then you think about Draymond, and Draymond would have to be the best version of Draymond, but this dude is getting hurt a lot now as he gets older too. So that's a little bit of a worry. Last thing before we get to our interview with Michelle Smith. Secretly, I would like to see the Warriors send off a few depth pieces. And this is also selfishly, by the way. Can Gui Santos be like a top nine rotation guy?
I think if they were to go to the route of starting both of their wings and Kuminga and Wiggins, if you have a shooting five, I think he does shoot up the depth chart, because then there's not much wing depth on the bench. But if things continue as is and JK comes off the bench, Wiggins starts, Kyle Anderson's on the roster, like, I don't see it. But man, I feel he's such like a Kerr guy, and we like him too. So yeah, dude, get rid of Kyle Anderson. Do the trade. Get add up the money and let's get Gui up there.
Yeah, Gui has to infuriate the other teams. There was a play last night where he just hustled his way into one of the Thunder guys just getting like a ridiculous foul, just because Gui was like just hustling his ass off. And I think guys like that, they are a value to an older team, because they provide energy. And sometimes when you watch the Warriors, they're so sleepy. Like, it's just like, oh man, we got to play again. And, you know, we're running through all these actions and you see Steph on the bench and he's just like, his mind is wandering. And then Gee comes in and everyone gets fired up because he makes like this crazy hustle play. And so it's stuff like that where I would just love to see him get a spot to be. Now, the thing is if he was much better defensively than he is, and maybe he can still grow into a little bit better of a defender, then you have reason to play him a little bit more, because then it's about the defense and it's about the hustle. And we see these kind of players who are, you know, defensive igniters and energizers. I don't know. I love watching this dude play. Like, in this kind of lost season so far, he might be my favorite thing. You know, obviously it's Steph. Steph is always our favorite thing, but after Steph, I think it's Gee. Like, I just get so excited watching him play. And I'm probably, you know, if I'm multitasking and I have the game on and I know Gee's in, like, I pay attention more, you know, rather than watching, you know, Buddy Hield get lost on defense or hoist a three that he's wide open and it doesn't go in. I watch that dude and I go, okay, like, this is a reason that, you know, to watch and to pay attention, because you like to see guys early in their career. And he's like dying for a spot, right? He's trying to create his career, and you can see it in every moment that he's on the floor.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoy like watching the fan base also rally around him, because he kind of does, in a sense, represent Anthony Lamb, Lester Quiñones, guys who are just hustle guys, and like Kerr just favors them. But I think the difference is that those the two players I mentioned played over Kuminga and Moody mm-hmm. at times, whereas Gee's not doing that. So I feel like the fan base is still on his side. But at the same time, he's someone who the Warriors drafted and saw like potential in. So I think there is a difference there as well, where we're watching, you know, the development of someone, as opposed to, you know, Anthony Lamb, who had already been on Houston, and Lester. I think he actually might have, I forgot his back, his history. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Gee's very, I love watching him play, hustle guy, and I hope he stays in the rotation.
We are the Gee Santos podcast, because we did see him at the California Classic and we were very like, wait, first, we got the Brazilian Luka. He doesn't play like that anymore, but he did have a layup like that where he did kind of that slow down Euro layup last night. So I was like, oh, that's the Gee that I remember.
Yeah. Like, we saw his very first Warrior game, at the California Classic. And now I feel like if you put those players side by side, I feel like he's really bulked up. He looked like a skinny guy in that first game that we watched him. And now I feel like he's like gotten pretty strong from Santa Cruz and, you know, his experience in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, he's just in much better shape too. He's so much leaner. He figured out that, okay, I can't be playing this Luka style game, you know, in the NBA. I have to lean out and I have to be much better, in much better shape, quicker. And his shot looks pretty good. It's not fantastic, but it looks pretty good. So,
yeah.
All right, we're going to pass on to our interview with Michelle Smith, who's been covering the WNBA since day one. It was really fun, and we hope to bring her back sometime, you know, once the Valkyries start playing as well.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Valks Valley.
All right, we have women's basketball coverage royalty on the show today. Our guest, Michelle Smith, who is a longtime writer and journalist and a senior contributor for the online publication The Next, and is also Senior Director of Media Relations at my alma mater, San Jose State. If people are watching on video.
Spartans. Yeah, there you go.
Is joining us. Michelle, we appreciate you taking time out of your day to help educate us and our audience about women's basketball.
You got it. It is going to be a process, especially with the Valkyries right now. We're going to learn a lot. We're all going to learn a lot together. Still a lot we don't know.
Exactly. And I think, so that's why I initially wanted to talk to you is because you had this column that you wrote titled, Hey Free Agents, Consider the Valkyries. And it was published on January 26th. And one of the first sentences mentions a couple of players, Alyssa Thomas, Jewel Lloyd, Satu Sabali, and Kelsey Plum. And since writing that and publishing that on the 26th, it is now
three
the
of those 30th. Players are off board.
Basically all of them are off. I think the most recent report with Satu was that she was taking meetings with New York and Phoenix. Yeah. So even then, it starts to feel like we might not be in the running for her. But I guess I wanted to know from you is that you've gotten the opportunity to speak to Ohema Nienen. I read your piece before about talking to her, and we've said on this podcast a few times. We went to the Invisalign Bay Area Women's Classic at the Chase Center, and she spoke a little bit before, and people were asking her questions. And I respect her so much in the sense of, like, she doesn't really give you much, I feel like, when you're talking and like in the sense of the idea of the team, like what the team she wants to build is, you know, you don't really get like, are you going to go big game hunting with the free agent? Are you going to build through the draft? It's, you know, kind of service level a little bit is how I feel when I hear it. And so I guess I wanted to know from you, since you've had the opportunity to speak to her, we now have a few of these free agents off the board. Do you think that there are, there's like any, I guess, what we can take from this? Do you think there's, because there's a couple more big time free agents on the board, like a Neko Ogumike that I know has Bay Area ties. Do you think that, you know, we'll hear the Valkyries name in a few of these, in a few of these, like soon to come?
I'm hoping so, but I'm a little bit concerned to this point about how quickly some of the biggest free agent names lock themselves up and sort of lock the Valkyries out, right? So I think what you're hearing from Ohema a little bit is, hoping. And what I got from her was like, you know, she's making a pitch that, listen, you know, we're going to come build with us, come make history with us. Come, you know, the only player they've signed so far out of the expansion draft class is Monique Billings. And Monique is a great player, played at UCLA, covered her there. But she's bounced around the league a little bit. And so, you know, she's bounced around, four or five teams already in her young career. And so they're going to nail down Monique, who has the potential to be a really, really nice, probably starter level player for them. But where, you know, Kate Martin is a name. Unrivaled is building, you know, the Unrivaled League is building up Kate Martin's profile even a little bit more. And then a lot of international names. And those names aren't as familiar to American basketball fans and American WNBA fans, except for the really diehards. But it's interesting to me that I see a parallel between the way that the Valkyries are starting to build and the way Bay FC did it with in the Women's Soccer League, where they leaned heavily into international talent because those were the best players available to them as an expansion team. And I see a parallel path happening here. And I think that's going to be interesting for fans because I don't see NECA leaving Seattle. I would love it. When she signed a one-year deal last year, I said, oh, man, it's 1 year in Seattle and then off to San Francisco. But I think she's committed to what's going on up in Seattle. And, so I think that this may be, you know, there are some free agents left on the table. Valkyrie's name could get called soon, but I don't think it's going to be the Kelsey Plum, Jewel Lloyd, Satu Sabali splash that everybody was hoping for. And then keeping in mind that with the new collective bargaining agreement, everybody on the league is essentially on a one-year deal anyway. So all of those things are sort of coming into play. And I know that the Valkyries folks knew the CBA thing was coming, knew the likelihood that players were going to opt out. And so they have money to spend. They need some people to spend it on. And that's where we are right now.
When I look at Ohema and Natalie as kind of like the tandem leading everything. I'm very impressed at their media savviness. Like Brian said, Ohema's like, she's not giving away the game plan, but she is clever and she is witty and she is funny. And she uses that in the media. I think she comes across very well. And Natalie, her story is amazing. And she's such a go-getter that the tandem of them as representing the Valkyries right now, I think is very strong. But what do you think about that message? Ohema mentioned entrepreneurs. Now, those of us in the Bay Area, we kind of understand that. Silicon Valley, I come from startups. But like when it comes to WNBA, you know, entrepreneur isn't necessarily what I think of when I think of the WNBA or why I would kind of come into choose the Valkyries over another team. Like you choose the team because you think that they can win or because, you know, you can get paid more. What do you think she means by that? Because I've heard her say that a lot.
I think it has sort of a double meaning. I think, and in terms of entrepreneurship, let's talk about what we're seeing right now. So, you know, it's Breanna Stewart and Nafisa Collier who started Unrivaled and brought some major TV partners on board and brought this great facility. And the product is really interesting and the ratings are pretty decent. And so that is entrepreneurship. There's an opportunity there. But I think what Ohema is doing is sort of putting a double meaning on it, which is, A, you're in one of the most creative places in the world, one of the most entrepreneurial places in the world. If you have a great idea, if you want to become a business person in your own right, you're well placed in this market because there's access to VC, there's access to, you know, Joe Lacob's exposure to his friends with VC money and that, right? Like, so she's playing to their life ambitions in addition to their basketball ambitions. And, you know, I mean, for better or for worse right now, being an entrepreneur in this context in a basketball sense means being willing to be in the startup phase of something when it may not go gangbusters to start, right? Like if we're going to use that tech vernacular, this is a startup. It is a well-funded, well-managed startup, but it is a startup nonetheless, and the product hasn't been rolled out yet. And so I think for a lot of players, especially in this year of CBA and wanting to maximize their value in a CBA and things, that maybe they don't see that coming to an expansion team and even being the head of the marquee on an expansion team that likely is not going to, you know, they're not challenging for a title this year. And I don't think anybody thinks that they are. But I think in this year of CBA, players are looking to maximize their value for the next CBA. And I don't know that they feel like they can do that yet in Golden State. I'm not saying it's not going to get there. I absolutely believe it's going to get there. But this has now become a very sort of weird season with the CBA sort of looming over everybody's choices. And I think that that doesn't necessarily help the Valkyries. But when she's talking about entrepreneurship, I think she wants to appeal to, again, players' life ambitions and their basketball ambitions. But unfortunately, being an entrepreneur in the basketball sense this year probably means taking their lumps on a young team for most of the year. And then, you know, but getting the exposure and the fans and the excitement around the Bay Area and being part of something really cool, but not necessarily being part of a winning team.
So you talk about players maximizing their value. You mentioned the new CBA coming in the 2026 season. And I think I've just been wondering, you know, you see the report that the Sparks weren't confident in who would be available at number two, which is a part of the reason why they traded that pick. And so I think of like, you know, Olivia Miles, Kiki Iriafen, players like them, they have another year of eligibility in college, I believe. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I think they have another COVID year. I know Olivia does for sure. I don't know for Kiki.
Olivia might. Kiki does not.
Paige does too, right?
Like yeah,
Paige has a year, but it's not it's injury. She's got an injury redshirt left over. She could decide to stay if she really did. If Dallas wants to hang on to that one pick, Paige does not have to stay. I did think it was notable to see Draymond wearing a Juju Watkins shirt the other night. I think that was a little bit of wishing and hoping that if Juju comes out a year early and Valkyries, you know, get into that lottery pick space that Juju's a possibility. I enjoyed the shout out.
Yeah. And I think I was wondering, like, okay, so I wish there was an easy place to find like college eligibility, because I kept looking for it and I couldn't find it. And then I found a website that was like, you could find it, but only if you are that player. Like, I had to have an account. Like, I had to be Olivia Miles to find out my eligibility.
Right,
but I was wondering, like, like, for players that maybe still have that eligibility that are at the top of the draft, I think Olivia Miles is probably just the best example for this, mm-hmm. because she could decide to stay for another year, and she's probably still a top five pick in next year's draft, I would assume.
Yeah.
And assuming that the CBA kicks in, you know, you have your 3-year rookie scale contract with that fourth year being a team option, and that's expected to be much higher if these players decide to stay for another year. So we talk about the maximizing value.
Yeah.
Do you think that a few of these players, and again, I don't know which ones outside of Olivia Miles and Paige, but do you think a few, like, the sparks were onto something? Like, Olivia actually might just stay for another year because she can get a way bigger bag if she decides to stay and come out of the draft next year, when there's going to be a rookie scale contract that has way more, I don't know the numbers, but would be way more potential payout.
I mean, I think there are multiple factors for these players and their college players for their decision making. What are they making in NIL right now? What is their NIL bag right now? And do they, you know, and is that worth them not coming out and taking a smaller rookie, you know, and taking a smaller rookie contract this year and then waiting until next year when the CBA goes into effect, when that not only that goes up and maybe makes up for, you know, some of the NIL money that they're going to lose out on when they make the transfer over to college, or do they pick up those sponsorships and move over? You know, I think that there are a lot of financial decisions, and I think this is a limbo year for a lot of players in terms of decision-making. You know, everybody I think assumes or understands that Paige is not excited about going to Dallas, and is there a deal to be worked there for somebody else to get the pick? If Connecticut, for example, gets really close to winning a natty, but they come up short again, is Paige going to stick around for one more year because she wants that ring from Connecticut? Every great player that we can reel off at Connecticut has at least one ring, right? Like Diana, Sue, Stewie, Swain Cat, like if you, you know, go through the ranks, all of those players have a ring. Does Paige want to be known as the best UConn player who never got a ring? Or does she want to, you know, I just think that players have options that we didn't talk about 5 years ago or 4 years ago or 3 years ago. Sorry, excuse my French. But it's, you know, the players have, you know, they have NIL considerations. They have a new CBA. They have what they want to leave behind, you know, in terms of their own marketability and, you know, in the game. I mean, you know, Caitlin Clark didn't win a natty, but she is the most marketable women's athlete outside of probably a couple of the individual sports, maybe tennis, right? So what, you know, players have options, and that those options, we're going to see how the Valkyries fit into that matrix of options for players over the next few weeks. And then in April, again, in the draft, but you know, Valkyries are not in a lottery position. And so I think they get a nice player no matter what. I don't know that they get a star or a game changer, but they'll get a really nice college player. And, you know, and presumably she'll be able to make a roster. But, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, I'm looking at the expansion draft, and, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, Temi Fagbenle and Kayla Thornton and, you know, Kate Martin. I mean, and, you know, if Ileana Rupaire comes and plays, like, these are some really, really talented players. If they can put it together, you know, they could surprise, and by surprise mean hang around probably toward the playoff part of the standings. But this is going to be, they're not landing the big names that we're all hoping with all the money they have. And Joe Lacob saying, we're going to play hard in the free agent market. The players right now are determining where they want to be. And for the moment, Golden State isn't top on their list, clearly, because it's not happening.
You've mentioned Unrivaled, which is in season right now. And I think the whole presentation of Unrivaled has been very impressive. You know, obviously Paige, she's got some great NIL money. I know that she and I think is she are she and Juju like small investors in Unrivaled? Like, I remember hearing something about that.
Yes.
So, you know, theoretically, if they were to even if she wanted to hold out for a year, could she actually physically leave college and then her draft rights could skip a year, or she just, or her, or the second she stops playing college, that's when her draft rights start? Like, I'm just trying to think of what other options she could have. Like, even if she wins a title, could she go, hey, I'm going to take the year off of the WNBA, I'm going to play in Unrivaled, and then come and re-enter the draft? Could you actually do that, or do her draft rights start once she's done with college?
I don't know the answer to that question. It's an interesting one, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't know. I kind of don't imagine a scenario where Dallas gets to hang on to her draft rights if she decides not to play and just focus on Unrivaled. And again, Unrivaled is, it's new. It's, we like the way it looks. We like the way it feels. We like what it's doing for players. But I don't know if that's a pathway to her for a big splash out of college. Like, she wants to go the place she wants to go. She wants to come into the W and make an immediate impact. And I don't know if that pathway is, I don't know if anybody'd be recommending that pathway to her at this point, beyond the fact she's got to really not want to play in Dallas. And I feel like if she really doesn't want to play in Dallas, then she's got the juice to force some sort of a sign and trade.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if she could scare Dallas out of like, hey, I'm going to stay in UConn for another year. They trade that pick, and now she's like, oh, maybe, Golden State, like, right, that'd be the face of that. That sounds fun. And then I think on just kind of going in a different direction, I when Alyssa Thomas got traded, I kept seeing like tweets and social media posts about like when she played for the Olympic team, like her eyes got really, really big at like the idea of, oh, wow, we're being like treated very well in the sense of the training room we're playing in, like the equipment, like everything's pretty top tier compared to what I have at Connecticut. I keep seeing that like Phoenix has like top of the line stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I felt bad for Natasha Cloud because she was trying to recruit free agents to that, mm-hmm. Phoenix team because of the facilities, and then she gets traded in that deal. Do the Valkyries have like pretty equal facilities to Phoenix, or is it, or are they like a tier above?
Well, so the Valkyries are using the Warriors' former training facility in Oakland. It's a beautiful facility. I mean, the Warriors were there until they made the move over to Chase. It's really, really nice. It's business offices. They can run the entire franchise out of those Oakland offices. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how that goes with players, because it's not like getting to Oakland from San Francisco on your game days and things. First of all, it's not like Chase is easy to get to. Sorry, not that. Not that easy to get to generally. And two, that, so you're practicing and you're doing your stuff every day on the Oakland side. Like, where do you live? And what's your plan to go back and forth on game days? And, it's not, miles wise as the crow flies, it's not far, but it's not close. And I'm interested in that setup. And I'm wondering how long the Valkyries stay in that Oakland space, if the feedback they're getting from players is, well, where do I live? Do I live in Oakland or do I live in San Francisco? Because if I live in San Francisco, I got to come over the bridge every day and go to practice and do the thing. And then I've got to go back into the city, or vice versa. And as we know, as Bay Area residents, and I'm Bay Area native, none of these places are inexpensive. So that, I wonder about that too. I wonder about the cost of living, and I wonder about that Oakland-San Francisco thing, because it doesn't seem super convenient.
Yeah, and are the Valkyries comping that $8 toll fee over the bridge? I would get enough. They should just do a little complex on Treasure Island right in the middle.
You got players hopping on BART. The WNBA BART train. That to me is an impediment a little bit, I think. I mean, I think the facility can be beautiful, but if it's inconvenient and it's not anywhere close to where they play games all summer, I don't know.
Yeah, I almost feel like the way they presented all that is like, we feel like all of the teams got moved out of Oakland, the Warriors got moved out of Oakland, the A's and the Raiders. It's like, we want to have still some presence in Oakland, but at the cost of maybe inconvenience to the players.
Well, you're landlocked at Chase. There's only so much room in that facility for new facilities. Mm. And there's nowhere, there's not a lot of space on that footprint to begin with. It's not, I don't know all of the construction, logistics, but doesn't feel like it's easy to create a space for them. but that may be the thing that they're either trying to do or going to have to do at some point. You know, I'll be honest, there was a secret little part of me that was hoping that they might play at Oracle. It's a big facility. It's got great public transportation access with BART, make it easy for people to get there. And if you were going to do the Oakland thing, but I'm Joe Lacob and I spent a lot of money building Chase Center. And if I'm going to get a WNBA team, I want them to play there. But again, this Oakland San Francisco thing is for players. I could see why they're not excited about that.
I wanted to take a back up a little bit and take a broader view of the WNBA context. Caitlin Clark, it sounds like, now this has been reported, I haven't heard it from her mouth, that she is not going to be at NBA All-Star Weekend. She wasn't marketed to be there, but there was this idea, and Brian and I were actually talking about this last year, like after Steph and Sabrina had their shootout, we both sat there and said, oh, Steph and Clay versus Sabrina and Caitlin. Like, that's easy. That's easy, an easy event, and it'll take over the whole weekend. And so I think we all just kind of, like, assumed that that may have been the plan. But it sounds like that she's not going to do it. It was reported that she wants her first shootout to be at the WNBA All-Star Weekend. What do you think about that idea? And what do you think the WNBA would have wanted her to do?
I think the WNBA would have wanted her to go to NBA All-Star Weekend with a worldwide eyes and do that setup. I mean, that has been, you know, I think that whole thing was great for both Sabrina, but also the W. My understanding is she will be there, but she didn't want to participate in the three-point contest. There was something about her not wanting to shoot off a rack, which I just thought was weird and sort of un-Caitlin-like. And I didn't think anybody did her any favors by floating that she doesn't like to shoot off a rack. She likes to catch and shoot, but okay. And you know, and
I don't think anybody likes shooting off of a rack, by the way.
No. Catch and shoot. Right. And then, her wanting to do her first one in Indiana. And I get that, but I think the W probably really would have wanted her to do it. I know I wanted her to do it. I'm going to be there. I wanted to see Steph and Clay and Caitlin and Sabrina. I thought that was going to be amazing and I'll still go. I think it's still going to be great, but you know, I hope they're going to find a second, you know, Kayla McBride or somebody from the W who doesn't have Caitlin Clark's name, but I want to see that too. I do think, I think it'll be fun. And it also just takes a little bit of the pressure off of Sabrina, because that's a lot to carry for the entire league when it's just, you know, and she did great last year.
She was awesome.
She did amazing.
Year.
She was awesome. But that's a lot. That was a big risk reward for her.
Just a small follow-up. The WNBA, you know, obviously there is some investment by the NBA. But do you think there should be more, or do you think the W should separate a little bit from kind of the overbearing kind of shadow of the NBA? Because I think there are positives and negatives to them working together. Something like this could be fantastic. But at the same time, I wonder if leaning on the WNBA, it could be, you know, you kind of have to sort of, for instance, last year I was, you know, they had this big buzz with Caitlin coming out, and I'm not sure that they're ready to handle all of the eyeballs yet. And it's almost like if they had like an extra year, I feel like they may have been able to handle all of the noise. And I think they did a pretty good job, but I just wonder if, you know, fully becoming sort of distancing yourself from the NBA forces them to make some decisions that are less collaborative and maybe more, you know, more beneficial for them as an independent organization.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the players might have a different answer to that. I think the players would like to be their own thing again, build their own. I think the players feel like they've built this to this point. They've done a lot of the groundwork to build it. I don't necessarily think that the NBA, you know, WNBA doesn't have the staff, the infrastructure that I think that it should. And that's on the NBA, because I think that they sort of control how big the infrastructure is in the league. So I think this is a hard question, I think, because I think there are a lot of reasons to see a benefit to the W from breaking out and doing its own and getting out from under the WNBA. They certainly could be successful in their own right, and we could stop this ridiculous narrative that the only reason they exist is because the NBA props them up. And I hope we're getting past the point where people still think that, but I don't know that we are. And so, you know, they would be able to sort of build it in their own right. But there's also an inescapable safety net of the NBA in terms of resources, in terms of the kinds of resources that you see from the backside, video crews, their ability to bring the house when it comes to an all-star game and have just a bunch of people who work for NBA enterprises show up and do all of the cool, like there's enough support from the NBA in areas that people don't really see, but are ultimately really important to the W that they'd have to go out and get on their own. So the short answer to that question is, I don't know that I know what's best. I know that there's definitely a pro-con list on both sides. And I think that the players would be interested in finding out, if separated from the WNBA, what their value would be on their own. And I think that there'd be some players who'd be interested in finding out.
And so do you, I was wondering from a draft perspective, has there been a specific player that maybe you've been kind of keeping your eye on for the Valkyries, someone that might be available? Because I think of like going into the season, I think it was a very clear Paige Bueckers 1, Kiki Ariofen 2. And then since then, I feel like a few things have changed. Olivia Miles has shot up. And so Kiki would be 3. But then at the same time, it's like, if you're the Chicago Sky, like, we already have Camila Cardoso, we already have Angel Reese. Is Kiki someone we'd seriously entertain to draft there? And I think it feels like from covering the NBA for a while, it does seem like best player available maybe consistently does get selected. So if this was the NBA, Kiki would go 3 regardless. But from the conversations I've been hearing within the WNBA, it might be more like team fit sometimes takes priority over potential and best player available. So I guess that's why my mind got running, like, oh wow, do we have a real shot at landing Kiki Ariofen? So has there been anyone maybe you've been keeping an eye on?
I mean, I've been keeping an eye on Kiki as well. I think that, you know, Kiki was in a different situation at Stanford, and it played to her strengths in terms of, A, she had a complimentary person inside with Cam. And so defenses, you know, and USC has that, but Juju has the ball in her hands so often. You know, in Tara Vandeveer's system, the edict was always pound the ball inside, feed the big girls. Like, this is what we do here, right? Like, this is, you know, it's what they've done for decades there. And Kiki benefited from that by, you know, improving her hands, improving her finishes, improving, you know, getting out and stretching the defense and her pull-ups, her pull-up jumpers, and, you know, all of that. She really rounded out her game in that way. But they're asking you to do something a lot different at USC with Juju having the ball in her hands so much. And I think that Kiki could, I think that might give a couple people some pause or say, hey, in our, now that we've seen how she functions in two different systems, right? Like a guard driven system where we've got the ball in our star players' hands all of the time, and how does she operate? And, you know, a system where getting the ball inside is going to be a feature and a focus of the offense and the way that she can succeed. I think there's a chance that Kiki could fall out into a place where the Valkyries could get her. And I think they would snap her up for a multitude of reasons. Obviously, one of them being, you know, I think that while it's not imperative for them to have a player with a local tie, I think they'd love to. And Kiki would be, you know, Kiki would be a great ambassador.
Great for the marketing of the team as well, I think.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you have another one, Bri?
I think one more that kind of came to mind as we've been talking is that I've been into the WNBA for a couple of years now, but I just recently, I've never been into a college sport. I went to the University of Arizona. I shared classes with DeAndre Ayton, but yet I never really cared about our men's team that much. And really, I remember, like, I have a clear memory of the women's game against Stanford, that championship game, Ari McDonald, Haley Jones, of like, really like, wow, this is awesome. And so this year I finally was like, okay, like, I have these great schools near me, Berkeley and Stanford. Like, let's look at the schedules. Let's see, you know, am I going to get a chance to watch like Juju in person against one of these teams? And then, of course, the Pac-12 no longer being a thing.
Yeah.
That kind of puts a hamper on some of that. So I was wondering, from the travel schedules that seemingly Cal and Berkeley have to do, that I assume UCLA and USC have a similar, like, we're in California, they got to go all the way over there. Like, do you see any of these teams maybe returning to the Pac-12 because of maybe travel reasons or I don't know, any type of them coming back.
Definitely don't see USC or UCLA returning to the Pac. I think that that's, I think that they were the first to go and they would be the last to come back in any scenario. I think that there's a, you know, I think Stanford and Cal are committed in the ACC, which is obviously the most painful move of any of the former Pac-12 schools that they've had to make. The schools that dipped into the Big 12, you know, Colorado, Utah, the Arizonas, travel-wise, not that big of a deal for them. Oregon State, Washington State will get out of that WCC arrangement after 2 years and go back into the newly formed PAC. I mean, I think the Big Ten is tough, but they all chose to be there for a reason. I mean, all four of those schools chose to be, it wasn't a lifeboat for them, right? Like it was USC, UCLA first, and then Washington, Oregon, who put the death knell on the PAC by deciding they were going. No, but none of them are coming back. So it's Cal and Stanford. Do Cal and Stanford make their way back? And I think the answer potentially at some point is yes. But the PAC needs, you know, my friend Teresa Gould, who's commissioner in PAC 12, needs to come up with, you know, she needs to make a media deal. They need to see the landscape and they would need to see if there's any way. They're committed, I believe, for at least 5 years to the ACC. What's interesting about the travel schedules for Cal and Stanford, but to a same degree for USC, UCLA, is they're going on these trips. So, you know, the old Pac-12 days were for the women, it was Friday, Sunday. And for the men, it was usually Thursday, Saturday. But you would travel the day before, the evening before to a school in your time zone. You would play your game. And then that night you would get on the plane and go back. And it was a 3-day trip. The trips that these teams are making, I was just chatting with Kate Pay, the Stanford coach. And the last trip that they made, their games were on Thursday and they went on Tuesday to make sure that they fly cross country, that they get acclimated, right? That they go on Tuesday and then they play on Sunday and then they turn around and travel back on Monday. These are 6-day trips. So they're going, they're gone all week. They're, and you know, students are out of class all week. They're away from their, you know, home bases all week. You're feeding them all week. You're making sure that they're supported academically all week. So it doesn't feel sustainable. It doesn't feel sustainable for student athletes. It just doesn't. And it only ever felt sustainable for football to begin with. But now that we're seeing it, you just have to wonder, you know, but I'm still of the hope that, you know, football's going to, you know, break off and do its own thing. And that all of these other sports are going to be able to go slide into some geographic relationships that make more sense than what they're doing now.
All right, let's bring this thing back to the Bay Area. Obviously, yep. You know this market very, very well. And when I was growing up, the Stanford women were the best program, like in the Bay Area for all of the college sports. I mean, it's not like, you know, there were some men's players who were very memorable, like at San Jose State, the late Ricky Berry. Like I very vividly remember seeing him play. Todd Lichty at Stanford, and even this one goes way back. Brian's never heard this name before. Nick Vanos from Santa Clara, who also passed away. I think he passed away in like a plane crash or something like that. Yeah. But so we had players, but from a program standpoint, it was always Stanford. Mm-hmm. And I remember checking box scores, you know, when I'm a kid, and I would always look at the Stanford women because they were always winning. And Jennifer Azee is running the point, and I'm kind of watching highlights of her because she's like the true point guard. And then when I'm at San Jose State, the Lasers are playing mm-hmm. at San Jose. And I remember I sort of had like remember a little bit of a dream where I was like doing play by play for the Lasers or something. And then literally the next day, Jennifer walks past me in her like gear, her basketball gear. And I froze. Like I didn't even say hi. I was just like, this is weird. This is surreal. But anyways, long way of saying that, you know, this market. Do you think the Valkyries are perfect for this market and can really make that big splash in a 49ers and Warriors and Giants market? Can the Valkyries step right in and be successful here?
Yeah, I think that yes, and especially initially, I think there's going to be a ton of excitement. I mean, I think that Bay FC in their first season, and they have, you know, they had a ton of games down in San Jose. Also, not necessarily always PayPal. It's a great venue, but not always the easiest to get to from all around the Bay Area. But there's a lot of excitement around having a W team. There's the opening of a women's only sports bar that's coming. Like there's, Bay Area's been waiting for their turn for a long time. I mean, I've been covering this league since its first day, and I've been waiting for a team in my market for a long time as I schlepped to Sacramento to see the Monarchs and traveled when I was with ESPN and, you know, did the day treks down to LA to see the Sparks play, whatever, been waiting, waiting, waiting. And I think there's been a lot of anticipation around having a women's professional basketball team here. So I think it's going to go pretty well. I think, you know, I think as all things do, it will settle out. And I think that they've got a window to put a really good product on the floor. And they're going to have a few years to sort of get to a point where they're competitive. I know Joe Lacob has said he wants a championship in 5 years. Okay. I mean, if the landscape is right for it, I think that's entirely plausible. I think the Bay Area is going to give this team a big hug. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's exciting times. Brian's actually closer to Chase than I am, and I know he's already thinking about getting to games. I just want to thank you for doing this. I used the word educate like very specifically in the open because, you know, I've been following the NBA since I can remember, just as a little kid, and I have glimpses and memories of following women's college basketball. Like I said, the Stanford teams, and you know, at this point, we were just like, you know, we have to put our foot in and start covering the WNBA and start covering women's college basketball more. And Brian has been really good at Brian watches actually more women's college basketball than he watches the NBA at this point. This has been so great, so helpful. I'm sure our listeners are grateful. Where can people follow you if they want to read you, if they want to see, you know, as you mentioned, you've been covering since the beginning, so you have so much knowledge about this league and you can continue to help educate folks.
At the Next Hoops, which is Howard Magdal's great site full of young writers who are covering this women's and college basketball and WNBA and international basketball, really, really great all across the country. So definitely the Next Hoops. And then I will share that I have a book coming out in the fall, Stanford Women's Basketball, The Legacy of Tara Vanderveer and the Stanford Women's Basketball Program, that will be out in September. And would love to come back and talk about that, because as awesome. You said, it's always been Stanford Women's Basketball. That consistency is the thing that separated that program. And then the ways in which they absolutely sort of occupy a unique space in women's college sports and in college sports. Tara was an early adopter of the three-point shot, which we know is what we live and die on now in pretty much both leagues. Just that idea of the video Vanderveer and that focus on scout and being able every single year, as you look at Stanford this year, I just finished a story for the Next, you know, they're 10-9 and they might not make the tournament. And that doesn't really have to do with Tara, but it has to do with, you know, like the kind of team they have, and shows how hard it was to go to 37 NCAA tournaments in a row. 37, crazy. So that'll be coming out in the fall and I'm super excited about that.
Brian, where did we see Tara?
We at the Invisalign Bay Area Women's Classic. Yeah. We were at
in Bribe City. We saw her, and it was just kind of one of those like, wait, is that who I think
like
it is?
Right behind us?
Yeah.
Yep. It was. I'm sure it was.
Yeah. And she still goes to all the Stanford games, I think, because
she goes to a lot of the Stanford games. Yeah.
I went to Stanford versus NC State because I really like Saniya Rivers for the Valkyries, and she was right there again. And I was like, you were just right behind me in line.
I pulled her out on New Year's Day at San Jose State. They were playing UNLV, and former Stanford player Lindy LaRock coaches at UNLV. She's the head coach. And I asked her, hey, are you going to see Lindy play the Spartans today? And she said, I didn't even know they were playing today. And then she rolled in on New Year's Day into a very quiet gym at the Provident Event Center, just because it was New Year's Day and it was a little bit quiet. But the goat walked in and everybody knew she was there. So
that's awesome.
It was great.
Well, if that book is on Amazon and we can get some pre-sale orders up, I will pre-order immediately if I see that link.
As soon as I have the info from the publisher, I will get it to you.
That will be awesome. So we'll use this as a way to say goodbye on this podcast as well. So really appreciate Michelle coming on and teaching us about
what we hope to be is a big splash for the Valkyries. But for Michelle, for Brian, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.